Ladies and gentlemen,
you want experience during your football season? Well, buckle up, sweet cheeks.
That's all we need.
We've got all the experience in the world. This is I Want Your Flex with Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon. Mike and Dan break down everything you need to set your lineups. From position rankings to starts and sits, the guys help you make those hard decisions. And now, let's get your flex on. Here's Dan Beyer and Mike Harmon.
Week 5 is here, and there was a Geno Smith sighting. That's where we are in the NFL in 2021. Welcome aboard, everyone. Get Mike Harmon on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me, Dan Beyer, on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. So one game in the books in Week 5 so far. It's our final week before the byes start kicking in. Rams top the Seahawks 26-17. Russell Wilson had to leave with a finger injury, so Geno Smith did get into the game, led the Seahawks on a scoring drive. You had Matthew Stafford dealing with a finger injury. He did not leave the game, but he left the winner as the Rams improved to 4-1. Seahawks fall to 2-3.
One guy plays through, the other is on the sideline holding a football but can't get back into the game. You're a Seahawks guy, Dan. I'm sure that didn't sit terribly well. Matthew Stafford gets his 365, the touchdown, the interception, a clean pocket once again, their fourth win over a playoff team from last year, which is kind of a big deal You roll. But, you know, Robert Woods evidently was in the ear of McVay and anybody who'd listen saying, throw me the damn ball! And so 14 targets, 12 catches, 150 yards, wide open spaces. I think that was the Chicks. I can't call them Dixie Chicks anymore. Cooper Kupp, 7 catches, 92 yards. And then that DeSean Jackson play that I'm still baffled. I've watched it probably 40 times. A terribly thrown ball. A bailout ball as Stafford's about to get hit. And three guys, I think you had the best analogy for it that anybody could possibly come up with, as DeSean Jackson pulled that in and then didn't run to the end zone. He ran out of bounds.
It looked like the three Seahawks defenders were taking part in the drunken baseball bat twirl where you spin around on a baseball bat and then try to run home, and they're just flying everywhere. That's what it looked like in the Seahawks secondary. That is what happened. That's what it reminded me of, as DeSean Jackson just stood in the middle while it looked like Jamal Adams and Sidney Jones and everybody were spinning around in circles. Yeah, that was a rough one for the Seahawks defense to live down. Jamal Adams had a bunch of things that are going to be rough to live down when it comes to coverage.
But it was one of those, in the postgame presser, Pete Carroll alludes to it and dances around it, but instead of just going and taking a baseball bat to further the analogy to all the principals who failed on that play, he just used some euphemisms, and you can read between the lines. Kind of like that guy that you sent a picture out at Dan Beyer on Fox as a field goal went wide at the end of the first half. He held up one finger.
Yeah, if you haven't seen a guy chugging a beer, giving the finger in a Steve Largent jersey on a misfield goal, go to at Dan Beyer on Fox on Twitter and you can find one, because it actually happened Thursday night in Seattle.
I think I'm going to do a painting of it and put it up in my house. Metcalf, 5 catches, 98 yards, 2 scores. Geno Smith acquitted himself nicely. Now, obviously, you go into the fact that you haven't seen him in a million years, but threw the ball well. I would have loved to see how that last drive would have come to be. Tyler Lockett, and again, Carroll, it's like, I don't know if he fell or was tripped. It's like, you know damn well there was contact that shouldn't have been there. Whether it should have taken him to the ground is a whole other deal, but the interception to seal things. But Russell Wilson, 11 of 16, the 152, touchdown, interception. Obviously, with the Rams, you're not expecting, you know, top five numbers necessarily, but you extrapolate that over a full game. I mean, that's 300, 2-2. I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's a pretty damn good game, as it were. And Geno came in and played well and nearly replicated those numbers in his time in the second half. So, but for the play that Russell got hurt on, right, was a would have been a huge play to Lockett. Just overshot him, and then you had the touchdown called back because of the holding penalty. So a lot of things that, you know, folks that want to be Rams fans and want to tell you how great they are going to miss the fact that the defense really was it was wafer thin given up a ton of plays. But as it is, it's only 17 on the board for the Seahawks on Thursday Night Football.
Tyler Lockett did have a bunch of missed opportunities in addition to that big play and then the touchdown that was wiped off. There are other opportunities as well. Obviously, his and DK Metcalf's status moving forward likely be dependent on that finger of Russell Wilson, but at least they have a couple of extra days. And in fact, they'll have a couple of extra hours because the NFL did not flex the Seahawks and Steelers out of Sunday night. A bit surprised. Maybe they couldn't find another matchup. As I mentioned, it is the first week of byes, but you will get the Seahawks and Steelers on Sunday Night Football. So Russell Wilson's health status, I think, will be a topic throughout the week. My takeaway from this game, and it's actually twofold when it comes to the Rams, Mike. Mm-hmm. Matthew Stafford was not great. His numbers look fine when it comes to yardage. Lowest touchdown output. But what it tells me is that even when Matthew Stafford is off, that he is going to produce. Like, you're not going to get any 120-yard stinkers. Yeah. And when you look at their defense, the defenses that they've played to start the season, the Bears, Colts, Buccaneers, Cardinals, and take away the Seahawks because I don't think that the Seahawks are on those levels, but we've seen what Arizona could do in getting after the quarterback. We know what Tampa's defense is about, and I think coming into the season we thought a little bit more highly of the Colts and Bears defenses. Point being, I think Matthew Stafford's just going to be putting up points for the Rams, so even if he doesn't look pretty and it seems like maybe he's taken a little bit of a step back from how hot he was the first 3 weeks, fantasy-wise, Stafford's still going to produce for you.
Yeah, I mean, you're still going to find your chunks. And right now, that offensive line is playing tremendous football. That's the thing I tried to highlight on the show on the network with Jason Smith as we watch the game and everybody tries to throw roses and tries to topple your MVP pyramid, Dan.
Idiots, don't even try, people.
I know. But it's the, hey, let's give credit where credit's due. This guy's operating from a clean pocket. And then, obviously, we throw laurel crowns at the quarterback. But he's going to attempt 35 passes a game. That's just the way it works. They're going to run the ball effectively in spurts tonight, obviously, coming into the game. What was Seattle, for fantasy purposes, second most fantasy points per game allowed to running backs? Henderson, 17, 82 and a score. Sony Michel held on to the ball today, 11, 37 and a score. So, composite with the one minus one rushing attempt for Matthew Stafford. That's 118 yards. I mean, that's a solid effort, good balance, and that yardage total will be there. Woods and Kupp are going to find their way, especially now that Woods, he said, give me the ball. So he gets his target count rose up. The other guys, it's a question of, you know, a lot of rolling the dice. If you're going to look for a third option in the receiving game, I mean, Tyler Higbee had the touchdown. He had two targets on the night.
Yeah, there seems to clearly be the hierarchy, which we knew it would be Woods and Kupp. Sprinkle a little Van Jefferson in, sprinkle in a little DeSean Jackson. But, yeah, it's going to be those top two guys. The thing about Darrell Henderson that I think is taking note, especially off of what we saw Thursday night, was Sony Michel getting 11 carries. Due to in part that Henderson at one point seemed to maybe have dinged up his arm a little bit, so Michel comes in on a drive. I would say this, if you are a Darrell Henderson owner, just remember what happened last year with the Rams. Remember they had the running back by committee with Darrell Henderson as part of it. Malcolm Brown was there, and obviously Cam Akers was there. There was the committee pretty much throughout the season that you had two or three guys playing roles at different times. But when push came to shove and the Rams were ready to make a postseason push, they said, Cam Akers is our guy, and they went forward with it. So with a guy like Henderson, Mike, what stood out to me was I think maybe Sean McVay says, you know what, we can lean a little bit more on Sony Michel now in this regular season. They gave him 11 carries tonight. He can do more. He's now been there a month or month and a half. So he's kind of understands things. You can now rely on him more. It may affect Darrell Henderson's value in the meantime. But in the playoff push, I think that Henderson is going to be the guy, especially at the end of the regular season. That's what I think that you could see from the Rams in their backfield.
Well, he's also a guy, though, that I would hold up as one of those, and we'll get to the overarching, you know, into the second quarter of the season now, analysis is I wonder if he's not a guy that I look at based on the number of times he exits a game because of an injury. if he's not a guy that you just take what you said, clip that off, and then go and start selling that to your league.
Hmm. Could be an opportunity. If there's value off of an 80-yard, you know, touchdown effort, I don't think you're going to see 150-yard, two touchdown games from him.
No, that's just it, yeah. Right? And then yeah. If Michelle's going to leech in on some of the goal line stuff, that's where it gets muddy.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're also – McVay loves play action, so you're going to get a bunch of that in and around the goal line as well. So that's the thing, right? That ceiling, I think, is a bit lower than with your normal leader in the clubhouse or feature back or whatever term you want to throw on it here. Mm-hmm. But, again, it's an offense that's going to put up points.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, maybe you do want to sell on Henderson at this point. I was looking at more of the long play, how it plays out.
Sure.
Granted, who cares? Honestly, if you're not going to make your fantasy playoffs, who cares what Daryl Henderson does with the Rams? Could be something to explore. And you mentioned trade, and it may be a good opportunity for someone to do that with Henderson. I think it's interesting to quickly just hit on the art of the trade because
sure.
Our new executive producer, Ryan Bershinger, brought up a point to us in the pre-show meeting on how he was able to swing a trade in one of his leagues. And what happened was he received the trade offer from someone else. He responded very quickly. And so that other owner then became paranoid that maybe the offer, like, that he didn't know something or the offer wasn't good enough. And I think that that's where all of us have been at that point, you know, at that point. There are some guys in some leagues, Mike, that will just throw out trade offers left and right and center and just constantly just turning over their roster or trying to turn over the roster. But then there's the other guy in the league who hasn't made a trade in 2 years because he's just afraid. He doesn't want to do anything. And there's this middle ground of it and finessing the trade and trying to at least make a correct first offer where you want to get some dialogue going, to me, is one of the toughest things to do in fantasy, to give a trade offer that it may not be the best for you or may not be the best for the other guy. You're kind of lowballing him, but you can't lowball it enough that you want a trade offer back. You want a counter offer. And I find that it's so difficult to finesse in fantasy football.
Oh, it's so hard because nobody wants to make the move that tanks them.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're playing, as most of us are, with colleagues, with your friends, family, whatever, you don't need the next round of beers to be, oh, and this dumbass who traded me player XYZ for a bucket of balls, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what it is. And everybody thinks there's a news piece that maybe you missed, right? Especially if it's a quick acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your seller's remorse, right? It's like, all right, here's my normal five insiders / info sites of what am I missing? What happened at practice? Did the guy get arrested? I mean, not that you want to go down the deep dark paths, but we call it what it is. We cover everything here,
it's
Dan.
Happened before.
No
yeah.
question about it. So, you know, and even just internally, all right, this guy got into a fight with the coach because, well, he got into it with his position coach, and the position coach told on him. You know, those kind of things. So craziness happens within, and trades, yeah, the guy that with the barrage, you want to mute him, but occasionally maybe he even gets overzealous or she gets overzealous and gives you one that's worth taking a swing at. Like, a lot of it is, the hard part is the finessing it and trying to figure out where the even value is, right? If you want to trade me a running back for a running back, you're wasting my time.
Sure.
Right? You want to, but the other one is the, all right, I'm going to trade you these three guys for your stud. It's like, okay, are those three guys going to play? And if I have my bench, are these guys better than the two guys on my bench that I'm going to have to cut? Because I may be interested in one of those three guys. Because that's the thing. You're trying to package it up and make it smell better by saying, here's, look at all the stats aggregate. But the reality is, you know, in a lot of those multiplayer things, you got a bunch of guys you don't want. Like, you might target one, and then it's a, well, look, it's all of this that you get, and there's really only one starter in the bunch. So why am I trading for a bunch of backups?
Yeah, I don't need Juju Smith-Schuster. You know, I'm sorry. You know, like, that's like what it comes down to.
You even put a name to it.
Yeah.
You just shamed Juju Smith-Schuster. And no, that throw-in guy.
Here's the question. Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
Yeah, that's the deal. There's also the guy who's like, well, I got Melvin Gordon sitting on my bench. Maybe I'll try to get DeAndre Hopkins off that guy. No, that's not going to work either. Like he's not going to give up your number one wide receiver. In those 3-1 deals, the one and the one have to be pretty close, because then the two and the three have to make it over the top for that guy with the one to be willing to do it. That's essentially what it is. The two and the three have to have value where your one then is worth making the move. That's how it goes. But the two main principles in the trade, even in a 3-for-1 trade, have to be, you know, somewhat close to each other for one of those types of deals to go down.
Well, this is where I get into my nerd Broadway love, and you want to be in the room where it happens, right? And you got to talk yourself into it. Likewise with a trade, you got to build the narrative. So it starts also with the research. Hey, you're going to get this guy, and he's got Houston, and he's got the Jaguars, and he's got, like, I'm trying to sell you Tennessee Titans players. But the idea being that you got to start the narrative of you're going to get the best of this guy coming up, right? And maybe get your eyes a little wider. But, you know, if you're smart, you're also still saying, well, why is he trying to sell him to me? But you've got to get the narrative. It's like any job interview, any interview when you're trying to apply to colleges, same thing. You got to pique the interest.
I'll tell you a trick that I've done. I've put a guy in my starting lineup to make it look like I valued him as a starter. Ooh. To offer him in a trade.
That's nice. I like that.
You know, to think like, hey, I'm not just giving you anybody, because when the person gets the trade offer and they go and look at your team and they see that all three players that you are offering them are on your bench, tells me a little bit like, all right. And guys know when a team is stacked and they just have too many good guys for one position, or if a guy's just trying to fleece stuff. But at times I've been like, all right, well, let me put this guy in the starting lineup, then offer him a trade, and then somebody else will be like, oh, well, he thinks he's a starter. And then it could go a lot of different ways, but I have done that before. I can't even tell you if it was successful or not, but I have at least done that.
No, I like that. A little Vegas misdirection there.
Yeah.
And a box of cupcakes, or maybe a nice edible arrangement. I don't know.
Oh, man, there it is, the art of the trade. If you would ever like to weigh in on the art of the trade, get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Byer on Fox. All right, it is that time. Let's get to the rankings. Top five players at the quarterback, running back, and wide receiver position for week 5 in the National Football League. Mike, who are your top five quarterbacks entering this weekend?
Locked and loaded with some of the usual suspects. Josh Allen right off the top at Kansas City. He's got multiple touchdowns, 3 of 4 games, 35 or more rushing yards in 3 of those 4 as well. And that's the thing you circle here, like a nice bonus for you. Kansas City, second most fantasy points allowed to QBs. Lamar Jackson going up against Indianapolis. Again, you're watching the people argued about the record that Harbaugh wanted to set. It's his record. Just, you know, calm yourselves. Life goes on. Nobody got hurt except Vic Fangio's feelings. So we'll see who he airs out this week as they roll up. Can he get mad at Mike Tomlin? Can that really happen? I don't know. But we'll see. But you've got the opportunity against Indianapolis, about 20 fantasy points per game allowed to opposing quarterbacks, 11 touchdowns, 3 picks thus far, looking for an opportunity once again for Hollywood Brown. Patrick Mahomes going up against Buffalo. One of the things that we want to spotlight over the course of the week is we're still in that part of the season where one good or bad performance can really change the averages. So you need to dig a little deeper. Yeah, I got my Princess and the Frog reference in. The kids who love the Disney stuff will be appreciative. Kyler Murray going up against San Francisco on your pyramid, no doubt, Dan.
He's number one.
Right? Standing
number
tall.
One. Yep.
For the first time in his
on
life,
top.
Standing tall. See what I did there? Because I'm about as tall as Kyler Murray. But going up against San Francisco. San Francisco right now giving up the fifth most fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks. And then it's a little bit of surprise. The much maligned Captain Kirk Cousins going up against the Detroit Lions. He's got his two best receivers still waiting to see if Dalvin Cook's really going to get back to 100 or is he just going to kind of limp through the year. But you got Alexander Mattison, so you've got opportunity there. So there's the top five. Only number five really a surprise here. The usual suspects coming through.
It's interesting because you've got Allen against Mahomes, Bills, Chiefs, Sunday Night Football. And I think Rams, Seahawks on Thursday night ends up taking a part of that as well. Browns, Chargers playing. The point being is you've got some really good matchups in week five, which then also leaves the rest of the schedule to kind of be, meh.
You want a crazy-ass number?
Yeah.
That Sunday Night Football game, the over-under is 56.5.
Ooh, wow.
You want to talk about spicy.
Yeah, that is.
Well, because but that's why I raised the cautionary tale. Like Buffalo, because of the early schedule and their dominance against bad teams, they're giving up 11 points per game. So people are going to be like, "Oh, should I do this?" Like, no, don't get cute. Don't overthink it. Look and see that it was the Jets. Look and see that it was a Washington squad that's not stopping anybody right now. Mm-hmm. And just relax.
Yeah. The Bills are going to be in quite a 180 when you face the Texans in week four, and then you got to go face Kansas City in week five. All right, let's get to the running backs for week five. Mike Harmon's top five running backs entering the week.
The continued love for Derrick Henry, so long as he's upright and running. Let's go. Let's get after it. Jacksonville, this game makes me nervous from a picking perspective, and I know you're in the pool and everybody else is in these pools, you know, with the confidence picks and all. I'm not very confident about this game from what we've seen with Tennessee, although the Zapruder film of A.J. Brown being out on a practice field is a good sign for folks. Alvin Kamara going up against Washington. As I mentioned, Washington's defense, they've not been good. Middle of the pack against opposing running backs thus far. You can get after them in the pass game, and I think that's where Kamara makes his mark. We still don't know what New Orleans is, but we know that when they're smart, Kamara sees the ball 20 times.
The Kamara factor, I think still his week two output has people a little nervous. What else also would make me nervous about Alvin Kamara is Taysom freaking Hill again in the red zone. Like that, it's becoming there was when Taysom Hill took over the starting job last year, Alvin Kamara's numbers suffered. Alvin Kamara had a .120 against the Giants in their overtime loss in week four, but it was Taysom Hill again in those red zone situations taking away potential touchdowns. That's the only thing about Kamara that scares
me. Yeah, week four, certainly not the game you wanted to see as the Taysom Hill stat line started flowing. I actually had a guy in one of the industry leagues that I'm in because of some late running back injury notes and just his quarterback, he wasn't feeling it, actually played Taysom Hill.
Really? Jeez.
Just went, rolled the dice, and
broken
came up
clock.
With one of those big wins right there.
Yes.
All right, let's continue on. A guy that I've loved, we've talked about him a lot, James Robinson. I'm sliding him all the way up to number three. Ooh. He's going to get fed a bunch against a bad Tennessee run defense, or at least that's my expectation. After all the turmoil this past week, we don't need to revisit all the Urban Meyer stuff. It has been a mess. Wife went on Twitter, said goodbye on Twitter, all this other stuff. I think James Robinson gets fed. Trevor Lawrence is acting like the leader that we expected him to be. And I think you have an opportunity here where they give you a better effort. I think they rally around this. Not that they're going to be world-beating, but the schedule sets up, and Tennessee is certainly nowhere near the contending team that we expected them to be. So I jump in there. So two of our top three running backs in that game. Number four, Austin Eckler against Cleveland. Another one where the numbers would suggest terrible things, but I think they commit behind that offensive line to run the ball and try to fight fire with fire, as it were, against the Cleveland Browns, because right now the Browns are second best against opposing running backs for fantasy purposes. Number five, Aaron Jones going up against your Cincinnati Bengals, expecting him to see a heavy workload in this one. Again, you look at the numbers through the first 4 weeks, middle of the pack, like truly middle of the pack, about 23 points a game to opposing running backs composite.
One more point about Alvin Kamara when we were talking about it. I think Robert Woods' situation that you alluded to earlier could also play into Kamara's situation. I think that Sean Payton knows this stuff. And honestly, I think most head coaches do. Maybe there are a few that are in the dark. But I think that Sean Payton would know that, hey, you know, if Alvin Kamara is going to give us 120 yards on the ground, he's going to carry the ball 26 times, maybe we do got to figure out a way for him to get the ball into the end zone. So if there is a Taysom Hill run like there was in week four, maybe there's more of a concerted effort to let Kamara get some of that love as well in week five.
Squeaky wheels, baby.
Yes, absolutely. Let's get to the wide receivers, the top five wide receivers for week five in the NFL.
Just like we predicted it last week. Well, there's Tyreek Hill again.
My goodness.
Couple of weeks missed in terms of fantasy purposes. Comes back with a vengeance. He tops the list this week going up against Buffalo. Again, 56.5. You're over under. Davante Adams, number two, going up against Cincinnati. Bengals defense up front has been pretty stout, which means some decent work in the secondary, but Aaron Rodgers making plays. DJ Moore for the second straight week. I'm putting him at number three on my board going up against that Philadelphia secondary, looking for some more magic, especially if Christian McCaffrey is cleared to go. As we sit down to record this late Thursday, early Friday morning, all expectations are that he gives it the old college try, Dan, and that's all you can hope for. Justin Jefferson going up against the Detroit secondary. And number five, scary Terry McLaurin going up against the New Orleans Saints. Taylor Heineke is going to be maddening at times if you watch it live, but if you just come and grab the stats after the fact, you'll be happy.
I have noticed something. You've got a couple of Packers in this matchup. I think Cincinnati, even with Joe Mixon's status, and to your point of when we're recording this,
Samaje Perine for everybody.
Yeah, didn't practice in those two games. But I think that you could see, you know, I can see this game. I'm just going to say this. It may be a contender for points of Palooza.
51, the over under, buddy.
Yeah, maybe a contender for my points of Palooza in week five. Just throw that out there. But you've got Jones, you got Adams in the top five. All right. We don't just focus on the top fives because we know that there are other guys that you want to know. Should I play? Should I not play? And what about if you didn't hear a name in the top five? We've got you covered in all those areas. Hot plays, cold sores, and ninjas for week five. We start out with our
hot plays.
Yes, the hot plays for week five. Guys that may not be in the top five, but that you should get in your lineup this week.
Already mentioned him, Sam Darnold going up against Philly. If I'm going to go DJ Moore, well, I'm pushing all in once again, looking for that offense, and especially if McCaffrey comes back.
Yeah, and your NFL rushing touchdown leader, Sam Darnold.
That's right, and that's the extra icing on the cake. He's been efficient passing the ball, but he's a bulldozer at the goal line.
Do you remember that Thursday night game? And I don't even know if it was last year, the year before, but he had like a 50-yard touchdown run, and it may have been against Denver. I can't remember. It was with the Jets. Anyway, he made that run, and that convinced me for like the next 5 weeks that Sam Darnold was a good quarterback. Like I can't even remember if it was last year or the year before, but it was that touchdown run. I'm like, see, Darnold's got something. Now he's got five touchdown runs on the year. Makes me think that I wasn't as crazy to think it back then.
Just had to get away from the Jets, buddy. Yeah, Daniel Jones with the Giants comes in. Another guy. Maybe he needs to get out of New York. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. But multiple touchdowns, three of his four games. Yeah, including his rushing efforts along the way. He's only turned the ball over once. And the only time he was shut out was against Atlanta. Make that make sense for me. But this is another game that I'm just really intrigued to watch because the Giants play hard. This is an over-under of 52. right? We circled that one. Another big point total is up there. Grab a couple of running backs. One from that game, Ezekiel Elliott. I think we could back off the ledge and breathe a sigh of relief. Giants' ninth most fantasy points allowed to running backs. He's got touchdowns in three straight. 95 yards, 143 yards his last two times out, starting to make it churn behind the offensive line, starting to stabilize a little bit for Dallas. Cordarrelle Patterson. Look, you're not going to get any of the hat tricks. Well, maybe you will. It's the Jets. But this is a game in London. No Ridley, no Gage, which means more Patterson, I'd guess. And maybe we'll actually say Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, let's not be ridiculous, Mike.
Did I go too far? Was that a bridge too far? I'm sorry.
Trust me, that's not going to happen. By the way, with the Falcons uniform font on their numbers, I am still having it. I don't know if it's a number 8. I don't know if it's a number 11 when I see Kyle Pitts run those routes. I can't tell what number is on his jersey. I think they need to make at least some adjustment to that.
I would concur. All right, three last quick ones. Wide receivers. Diontae Johnson. We already took the shot at Juju Smith-Schuster, but with Johnson when he's healthy, double-digit targets each of his games, touchdowns in two of three, 23 catches on 35 targets. How about going back to that Cincinnati Green Bay game and looking at Ja'Marr Chase, who's been fantastic. Jair Alexander's out with the AC joint, and King coming back from concussion protocol. They had to sign a couple of guys off the street, claim guys on waivers. There's a lot going on in that secondary. And as we know, they don't get much of a pass rush. So there's an opportunity for you. And then Corey Davis going back to that Jets-Atlanta game. Two games this season with more than 95 receiving yards, 29 targets thus far through 4 weeks.
Those are Mike Harmon's hot plays for week 5. There's always the other side of the coin. These are the guys that you don't want to play, you don't want to see, you don't want to touch, you don't want to look, you don't want to have. They are your
cold sores.
Cold sores, yes, for week 5.
Javonte Williams. I'm taking both sides of this running back situation. I don't want to touch it. Javonte Williams going up against the Steelers. You still got Melvin Gordon hanging around. We alluded to him before. But Steelers, zero touchdowns allowed to running backs just to this point in the season. Also, Najee Harris. Look, because of the PPR opportunities, right? 34 targets thus far this year. So you're going to have opportunities, and that's going to keep him on the fringe of the RB1s. But this is not a good matchup. Denver, first against running backs, just one touchdown allowed this year. So hang a star on that. You got Antonio Gibson going up against New Orleans, eighth best against running backs, just giving up 3 yards per carry. I think you're going to see more J.D. McKissick. You can exploit them a little bit in the passing game. A couple of chalk picks at quarterback because, look, it's easy to throw darts at what Justin Fields may do and a few others where you're just tempering your expectations. But Matt Ryan going up against the Jets, fifth best against quarterbacks. Yeah, quietly, they actually paid a guy and gave him a 4-year contract, a guy on defense you've never heard of. Only 2 TDs allowed thus far. Baker Mayfield, now we have the injury note that goes along with the overshooting of Odell Beckham Jr. and what have you. You've got a tough matchup, fourth best against quarterbacks when you look at it and extrapolate. That is the Chargers. That pass rush will get after him. I think that's the short list. We'll just pause there and exhale because there's a lot of cautionary tales out there that I think we'll be alluding to as we continue.
Well, let's you take a quick breath because we've got the hot plays. We've got the cold sores. There's one more category we need to hit, and that is
Fantasy Ninja.
For week 5, who are the ninjas?
Well, Joe Burrow. Eventually, folks will start raising him up to the level he needs to be. Plenty of options and opportunities there against Green Bay. Trey Lance looks like he's going to get the start against Arizona. Look to him to maybe a jailbreak player or two. and some of that yak we've seen from Deebo Samuel continues, maybe a play or two with his legs, give you some rushing yardage along the way as well. Kadarius Toney, I think, is interesting against Dallas. 6 catches on 9 targets, 78 yards. And you're looking at Dallas' fourth most fantasy points allowed to wideouts. So maybe getting a little deeper and maybe getting a nice connection going with Daniel Jones, as it were. Damian Williams for the Bears against the Raiders. They're giving up almost 5 yards per carry to opposing running backs. Yes, it hurts to lose David Montgomery. That I had some shares in him, not just the hometown play, just a guy who's I think been criminally underrated as to how good he plays because of what that offense is on a week-to-week basis. Brandon Bolden against Houston. Look, the Patriots are 9.5-point favorites against Houston. So Mac Jones, also worthy of a look-see in deeper leagues, 2 quarterback leagues, all those, he kind of breaks through.
Yeah, gosh, that game is, I mean, when Houston was, what, opened up at 17.5, may have gotten up to 19, I had heard, with the Bills line, and you lose 40-0.
Yeah. I still said lay the points. I did the show with TJ. He's like, come on, they're professionals. I'm like, yeah, but they're not as good as Buffalo.
Yeah, I was with TJ on that one, and boy, was I wrong. It wouldn't be the first time.
No, look, I've got 100 of them a week, Dan.
It would not be the first time, but yes, I was wrong on that one. Another time that I was wrong was when I do my segment called
3, 2, 1.
Give me one reason.
Yeah, give you one reason. I'm going to give you one reason. Give me one reason. Give you one reason why you should start or bench your guy. This was a long, long time ago that I was wrong about it. So you'll just want to listen to what I have to say. This is actually where I just give you one reason to play a guy and to start him in your lineup and one reason to bench a guy. And I'm not going to tell you to bench Patrick Mahomes. But if Patrick Mahomes didn't have a good matchup, I would say, okay, maybe Patrick Mahomes isn't going to have the week. I'm not going to do that here, though. We're going to get to the bench guy in just a minute. The guy that you need to start this week, though, is Laviska Shenault of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the wide receiver. And why you say that? It has nothing to do with Urban Meyer. It has nothing to do with trying to get out of the dance floor, not wanting to get on the dance floor, not flying back with your team, none of that stuff. It's just that Trevor Lawrence has a new BFF, and that BFF is going to be Laviska Shenault because of the injury to DJ Chark. So now Shenault comes in even more importance of a target for Trevor Lawrence. So in that Tennessee-Jacksonville game, Mike, I like Laviska Shenault as a start this week.
Ooh, I love it, love it, love it. I didn't like the fact that Urban kept referring to him as a gadget guy in the past. But I think he was just trying to give him a compliment of how he grew as a more complete receiver. I think there was a better way to say it. But either way, the point is made that Trevor Lawrence has a guy he trusts, and that injury to DJ Chark, absolutely brutal. Add him to the laundry list of guys that we have to put on the IR and send away.
And I know I'm going to contradict myself in this, because I said that there were 8 quarterbacks that are surefire starts in fantasy football, and then I added Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr to that list about a week ago, and then Cousins just completely failed me. But one of the guys in the 8 was Justin Herbert. And I'm going to give you a reason to bench Justin Herbert. Mike actually alluded to it a little bit earlier when talking about Cleveland's run defense, when he had Austin, and when he was talking about Austin Eckler. I believe it was that was the time even though Cleveland's run defense was pretty good, you brought up what they're doing in yards per carry. That is where I say bench Justin Herbert, because Cleveland's defense is top 3 in like everything, Mike. Mm-hmm. Points per game, rushing yards allowed per game, passing yards allowed per game, average yards per play. They're top 3 defensively in the National Football League this year. So I think you're going to see a much more defensive struggle in L.A. than what you saw between the Raiders and Chargers on Monday night. So I am benching Justin Herbert because Cleveland is a top 3 D in everything.
I would totally add on to that. That was a player on my cold sore list. Try not to double up too much here as we go through the analysis. But yeah, I agree. This is the major test for this offensive line, right? That we've extolled the virtues of through the first 4 weeks of this season. Justin Herbert, like, let's see what happens when the pocket gets a little muddier. Let's see what Mike Williams is able to do. Keenan Allen getting out of their breaks. Is there the third option that becomes a more consistent target that isn't Austin Eckler? But certainly an opportunity there.
All right, those were my give you one reason to start and give you one reason to bench a guy. Let's wrap this baby up, Mike, with our three-point conversions for week five. I will give you the floor on this one, the three things that we should look for as the games take place Sunday and Monday.
Referenced earlier, as you start going through your lineup decisions, trying to figure out your tiebreakers, remember, through 4 weeks, we can still have some wild swings on averages. So be careful to go to the averages. Go through the game by game. Look through the schedules. And give yourself a better opportunity to assess the reality of a situation versus a straight averaging. Buffalo and their 11 points per game being the one that stands out. We got rookie quarterbacks everywhere. Perhaps opportunities to pick up defenses and get aggressive, right? Justin Fields getting the start for the Bears. Going to be curious to see what the Raiders are able to throw at him at Allegiant Stadium. You know, conversely, the Bears with a strong defense getting after Derek Carr, but that's analysis for another time. But there might be opportunities, right? Because you can force the young quarterback perhaps into a mistake. And I say Fields because, well, new starter, firmly installed now in the Matt Nagy world. The 37-minute rants that I've done in the past, you can find those everywhere on the interwebs. But number two. Number three, get ahead of the game. You mentioned the bye weeks that are coming up, Dan. If you need to go find a defense, need to go find a kicker, you've always got one, at least one spot on your roster that kind of becomes the churn and burn, you know, the pump and dump kind of thing. And try to get ahead of it. Or you've got Jacksonville coming up on the schedule, or Houston coming up on the schedule. Go see if you could find that tertiary receiver, secondary running back. You may not play them, but again, you're now playing defense against the rest of your league as well.
My three-point conversion starts out with a Giants anniversary, and it is 37-34 in favor of Dallas. Dallas's defense, I know, is different from a year ago, but I also think that the Giants' offense is different from a year ago. Mike, I think we could see a similar sort of game in Dallas erupting on Sunday in the late window, which, again, really good games in the late window. You got the Niners and Cardinals going up against each other. I mentioned the Giants and Cowboys, Bears, Raiders, you mentioned, and of course Browns, Chargers, so another good window. So Giant anniversary, look for maybe more of the same from a year ago with the Giants and Cowboys. It will be my points of Palooza, but my points of Palooza will be, and I know I could say Bills, Chiefs, but I'm not going to go there. I like Tennessee, Jacksonville. And so when I heard you naming all of these Jaguars and Titans that maybe should be plays or guys that you may want to go against, I started feeling better about myself. I think you're going to see a lot of points in Jacksonville. I Urban Meyer's been scoring off the field. Hopefully the Jaguars can score a lot on the field against the Titans.
That was the guy's name was on the restaurant, Dan. I think that's going to help your case.
It's very true. Finally, buck the trend. What are you talking about? I have always been down on the Buccaneers running backs. This may be a week you could play Leonard Fournette. That's all I'm going to say.
There you go.
They go up against the Dolphins. It could be a game where you want to play Leonard Fournette. If you're thin on the running backs and you got Lombardi Lenny, you know what? I'm not going to be mad at you if you play him this week. So, yeah. So, why not Fournette in our three-point conversion?
Nicely done. Yeah, I had him on my long list because I have really long lists for every category. And then I realized that I talk too much, and Fournette was one of those guys. Buccaneers minus 10. The fact that he's being used as much in the passing game as he is, Dan, I think that's the thing that stands out for me.
It's Dolphins, Buccaneers, Battle of Florida. Jaguars get the winner. No, just kidding. All right, get Mike on Twitter at Swollen Dome. You can find me on Twitter at Dan Beyer on Fox. All right, let's be honest. Heck, you're going to be up for it on the West Coast here. We got London games,
yeah,
Jets,
buddy.
Falcons. You're going to be live on the air for it.
6:30 a.m. Pacific time. Yeah, I can't wait to see what the the Falcons trot out with all those receivers gone. Ridley, the personal issue, Gage out, and still waiting to see if we can get Kyle Pitts off of the milk jugs.
Wall-to-wall football on Sunday. Of course, you can hear Mark.
Yeah, there it is. Leave that in. Leave it in.
No.
Leave it in.
No. That's not.
It's fine. It happens. No, NCIS is back, baby.
No. You're my friend. I know your name. It's just. No. All right. Go ahead and leave it in. I'm an idiot. I was going to say you can catch Mike on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock Eastern time, 6 Pacific. And you can find me on Sunday afternoons, 5 o'clock Eastern time, Fox Sports Red Zone Radio, 2 o'clock Pacific. Of course, you can hear Mike every weeknight with Jason Smith, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, Monday through Friday. And you can hear me at the news desk with Doug Gottlieb on Fox Sports Radio. All right, week 5 is here. Hopefully, it will turn out better than my closing remarks did.
No. Hey, I'm flipping them off while drinking a beer.
For Mike Harmon, I'm Dan Beyer. This has been I Want Your Flex. Best of luck in week 5. We'll talk to you next week.